favourite film is awful.
Hello, and welcome to Your Favourite Film is Awful, the weekly show where we take your favourite films and recent releases and defend them against negative reviews. As always, I am Luke MJ Powell, and I have gathered with me two people who I've based entirely my choice on their skills. So, I have Charlie Lilly.
How you doing?
Who was trained by his father from a young age. His father was a soldier. He is deadly with any weapon. He's a killer. And I've brought Sean Grimsley.
Hi.
Who was trained from a young age by his father. He is a trained killer. He can use any weapon. Any item is a weapon in his hands.
It's true.
You get it.
That's why they banned me from Dale Winton's supermarket sweep.
Today we are doing the 2021 The Suicide Squad. Who wants to do the plot synopsis? Who wants the liberty?
I got this one.
Go for it.
James Gunn makes an R-rated version of Guardians of the Galaxy. I'll do it.
Okay.
A ragtag bunch of criminals are offered time off of their prison sentence if they agree to do some nefarious deeds for the US government. We follow a number of these nefarious criminals doing these nefarious tasks on a small island, and they've got to infiltrate a building and destroy some things inside of it. Do they get there? You have to watch the movie to find out.
Exactly. You have to put in the time. You've got to try. Or at least that's what you're saying. Laura Liu, with the 1-star review, states, just don't bother. Big pink and purple starfish they're trying to kill. Too fro-fro and childish in comparison to the first. Characters were utter pants. Margot Robbie saved the film. John Cena was torture. And whoever played the polka dot man should never work again. If you like Disney princesses with a touch of Mortal Kombat, crack on. If you enjoyed the first film, swerve this. It's a massive letdown and just pathetic.
I mean, first of all, great rhyming at the beginning. I think Charlie
brilliant.
Picked up on it.
I
enjoyed it. It took me a second. It's been longer.
Where to start?
I mean, where to start with that? Where to start with that? First of all, who enjoyed the first Suicide Squad?
literally.
I mean, Laura Liu for one.
Apparently.
And
Laura Liu's 1-star review.
I shan't lie. There were Laura Liu's 1-star review. There were a few other first film lovers.
Not even David Ayer likes it. So, like, where'd you go with that?
The guy who made it doesn't even like it.
I strongly disagree with that. I think I think this is the best thing that all of the people in this movie nearly all the people in this movie have done. Like, my favourite thing that John Cena's been in, I think for a Hollywood blockbuster, finally someone's got the right role for Idris Elba.
Oh, I thought the exact same thing. Yeah.
Like, finally been given the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Which is like, literally shit into the wind and enjoy the smell. Like, it's just, and not because he's shit, but because it's that gritty. Mm. I think Harley Quinn has a great time. Like the kind of like side thing with her, I thought was quite fun. And to see her slit someone's throat is a wonderful thing. I enjoyed the violence. I enjoyed, that review's just wrong.
It's first of all, don't diss my boy John Cena.
Did somebody call for Peacemaker?
It's a beacon of justice.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I heard
Peacemaker is here.
Squatter.
Oh
For purely listeners, you are missing out on Matt Full Fat.
So good.
Has come in with.
How you doing?
I can only describe.
How's the podcast?
Tin foil helmet.
The best cosplay.
Thanks. Of all the trousers as well.
Oh my, I love
the
red, it.
Yeah, I need just like
and the gun.
Tighty whitey.
Yeah, and the gun.
Yeah. No,
these are tighty whitey. Oh yeah, yeah.
I can see Sean's got his blood sport.
Oh dear.
Oh my god.
Oh dear.
Incredible. Amazing. What an outfit. Well, for everyone who's listened to the podcast, they have to go and watch the visuals
on YouTube
to fully
appreciate what's happening here.
To fully appreciate.
Is that just
Peacemaker Whittle?
Peacemaker. I'm going to use this on the Full Fat podcast as well.
You've got to.
Well, you can do it.
It's too perfect.
It's too perfect.
I think Charlie's better cast.
It's so good.
He's got the same vibes.
It's so. Did you just make that? It's incredible.
Yeah, I mainly got Terry to help me. The version of the mask I was trying to make was not good.
I was wondering why he kept asking me what time we're doing the podcast. I thought it was a bit peculiar. Incredible.
Yeah, I've been sitting on this plane just for hours. Matt, I've been like putting trying not to like squish it because it's so fragile.
He can't hear us, Charlie.
No,
can you relay that we literally were talking about John Cena? And
did you know? Did you know we were talking about John Cena when you walked in?
No.
Timing, mate. We were just saying how great he was,
so
and you came in like a WWE entrance.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Oh, Honestly,
lightning in a bottle.
It's actually perfect.
Oh, well.
Alright, fuck
well,
off
well,
now.
I'm off to kick some communist butts. I'll leave you
Wonderful.
Guys to
go eat your beach full of dicks.
I'm dead.
That was amazing.
That was magnificent.
That was nice.
You got to the timing was chef's kiss.
It was perfect.
He comes back in with some sort of one-eyed starfish on his face next.
Yeah. the thinker tubes popping out of his head. Oh, incredible.
Oh, jeez.
But yeah, how could you diss my man Cena in it? Immediately.
It's the best thing he's done. It's the best performance he's put in.
Yeah, and the thing is, I've felt like for a while that John Cena was the one to make a really good career in films, particularly not over The Rock, because I think The Rock's got, you know, he's got this kind of larger-than-life personality, but I think John Cena has potential to like do better roles. I think he's got a little bit more self-awareness than someone like The Rock has, so I'm really curious to see what he does with his career, and I think this was the perfect role for him. Not this in The Rock at all. I think The Rock's great. I love if he's a great person and stuff. And but I just feel like Cena has got a career ahead of him that's going to be more interesting.
I agree. I think Cena is more malleable because he's not stuck on the brand like The Rock is.
Yes,
like The Rock is
yes.
a brand.
You're right.
And
it's
like
yeah.
much like one of my main issues with the Suicide Squad, the 2016.
Yes,
version, sure, we can go with 16? That. That's fine.
Yeah, was Will Smith. Will Smith is a brand. He doesn't play bad guys.
Oh yeah,
and
I agree.
As a result, it's just the wrong casting. Like essentially, replace his character. I know they've got different names. But replace his character with Idris Elba and you can have the fun with it. And I think, you know, as freeing, as amazing as, you know, Will Smith's career has been, I've grown very tired of the fact that he can't move away from ever being a good guy. And The Rock kind of has put himself in that same seat, whereas I think Cena's got the potential to do more. He was great in Blockers, like to show the comedy chops. He's done really, really well in action franchises as well. And I think this is the perfect merging of those two things. And to round it all off, I just think he's just one of the nicest men to walk the planet.
100%, 100%.
Like his the Rock sincerity almost feels so on brand now that sometimes I'm not buying it.
I think
with Cena, like it's legit. Like I think the guy really cares, and I think there's a reason that the Make-A-Wish Foundation. He's done more than anyone else.
Yeah,
and he will continue to do so. Like I genuinely, and it's lovely to see. And this was my favorite thing about the film. Everybody's having a great time making it. It bleeds off the screen. 100%. You can tell that they had so much fun.
100%. And to go, sorry, to just wanted to go off with a little bit of the review where it said about the sort of silliness of the face hugging starfishes. I, for one, what I loved about that for me was I feel like this movie was a perfect combination of the two styles of James Gunn. You have the Guardians of the Galaxy, where you know, he has the heart, these group of misfits, whilst it also has the kind of silly but yet deeply disturbing comedy slash gore of Super. And I feel like he really combined the two in this movie. And I think it, I think it breeds something really, really different that we haven't had in the superhero franchise, I think, for a while. Just something, just one for it for to have gore and actually be gory and actually feel like its place fit and not just for the sake of it. And two, just because it has an absolute blast. Yeah. of it and embraces that, that rating.
Yeah. You explained yourself a bit because I was about to jump in and be like, the Suicide Squad and Suicide Squad both have like the mind control enemy masses element to them. It's just this does it a lot
yeah,
better.
Yeah, but yeah, like it's that is not even just, a question.
Yeah, it wasn't like a like if you hadn't explained yourself more, I would have been like, but you explained your point. I wanted to very quickly touch upon the one of the notes because you focused heavily on John Cena. You touched upon Margot Robbie. Laura says, whoever played Polka Dot Man should never work again. I don't know about you guys, like over the course of the film, Polka Dot Man became one of my favorite characters in the film.
He was fantastic.
Like I fucking loved that guy at the end.
I was on board from the beginning. I'm a big fan of that actor.
Yes. Yeah.
So I first became aware of him around the time of The Dark Knight, where he puts, you know, he holds his own between Ledger and Aaron Eckhart. And obviously Christian Bale, and you know he pops up here and there. You know he's in the Ant-Man films, and he's got a lot more to chew on than this. And I think it's very James Gunn to cast someone like that who's a solid character actor.
Yeah.
Who he's just like, no, you can hold your own in this. You can do it. And you know the main impetus of his character being his mother.
Yes,
and those just wonderful,
brilliant,
just wonderful. He's got that kind of like nervous energy about him, but he's also a kind of a badass, and it's refreshing to see. That's the kind of character that you legitimately have a chance of being.
Yeah, but not even like what I loved about that for me was, you know, the fact that kind of you kept seeing his mum and stuff was that's such a stylistic choice. You know, I mean, obviously it's story driven, but like it's such a distinct person's vision's voice. And I just think that's been really, and what I meant by my comments earlier was that I think the superhero franchise has been lacking, with a couple of exceptions, a voice within the movies. They all feel, particularly Marvel and stuff and DC, they feel very same until we get a James Wan's Aquaman, or we get Taika Waititi's Thor, you know, until we get these sort of like auteur driven superhero movies that everyone snaps back here alive again, and okay, superhero movies could be this now. Do you know what I mean? And I think this was definitely that for me. I felt it really just showed me how bored I've become of some of these superhero movies, and how they need to start allowing these directors, or just hiring directors that have more of a personality within their movies, I feel.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I do. And I wonder how much the R rating went away with that being the case. I think, you know, this film's success really lay in the fact that they allowed it to be an R rated movie. And that is really how James Gunn can express that side of himself. You know, you talk about the merging of the horror properly. This is definitely that. I think the R rating was a really good choice. I don't think it's affected box office.
Nope.
Unfortunately, because I don't like the film, but you kind of have to say thanks, Joker, because you proved it. I know the film was in production when Joker came out, so they'd already agreed to the R rating, but it certainly probably bolstered their Warner Brothers' confidence that you know, this could work.
Yeah. And it's definitely, to kind of like tie your two points together, it's like with the history of it, it's the fact that they snatched up James Gunn amidst the chaos with Marvel. Yeah. And so effectively, as far as we, the outsiders, without any contract knowledge, like they were just like, hey, do a film, do anything, make us money. Which, like, you can't really have that in days of MCU past, when it was like, this is the script I want you to do, and that's why people like Edgar Wright left Ant-Man and stuff, and Black Widow had such a hard time finding a director, because it's like, I need you to do this thing, and I've got this great director who can do all of the things, but I want them to do this one thing. And so you bash heads. Well, this, of course, it was, I feel, especially with the what you guys have been saying, like the vision and like the way it's been directed and the style and the voice, you can tell like it had much more freedom in that, in those areas, which, as you kind of said, it's been lacking in a few of these other superhero films that have been coming out of late.
Definitely.
Yeah. I
just feel like this is, I've always said this since Marvel started doing their thing, DC should have never tried to copy what MCU do. They should have just hired, they should have kept the class of Warner Brothers, hired phenomenal filmmakers to do really interesting takes on comic books, on DC movie characters. And I feel like they've just started to realize that now. And I'm excited for that, more so than the Marvel stuff now, because I feel like I don't know what it could be. I don't know. There's no, do you know what I mean? It could be anything. And I think that's definitely what they should be doing right now.
Yeah, I'm in a very similar boat, where I always wanted DC to do the Elseworld stories. I wanted a different cast every movie, a different director, just really throw everything at the wall, whilst MCU had their singular universe. And then, once again, like with Batman v Superman, DC announced that they're going to be doing Flash, and so that they can do all these wild and wacky Elseworld stories. And they've taken so long to get round to doing it that now the MCU have their multiverse in place. And once again, it's like, ah, come on, DC. Yeah. Do stuff.
What was you going to say, Sean?
I was wrapped up in what Luke was saying there. Sorry. I have to say, I've been frustrated by them, but I think Charlie's right. I think they've kind of realized that actually authorship is the way to go with this. And you know Matt Reeves' Batman, I think, is going to be, the fact that it's a standalone film, I think is, I'm more excited about that than anything Marvel has got coming out. And, you know, to be completely honest, like the next Marvel property that I'm the most excited to see is Taika Waititi's Thor, who got some, you know, who brought his own vision to that, and James Gunn's Guardians of the Galaxy 3. You know, everything else kind of pales in comparison to the filmmakers. You know, it's interesting that Gunn has gone on record to say, you know, like, Warner Brothers spend less time in the edit suite telling them how to make the movie than Kevin Feige does at Marvel. And, you know, that's obviously worked for Marvel, for certainly the bank, and you know, we're fans of those movies. But it's like, I wonder how much steam that engine's got left with. I mean, it's definitely got some steam left, but I think, you know, they really need to refresh that. And I wonder if Warner Brothers might be the thing that actually becomes a little bit more exciting. Not everything might work, but I think they're going to swing. I think they're going to swing bigger than they had been.
I agree.
I think getting rid of Zack Snyder is probably the right move for them.
Blasphemy! So many people are shouting. Shall we continue to the next review?
Yes.
Right. So this is from AJ Dunn. It's another 1 star out of 5. Apart from some salvageable shots, performances from Capaldi and Ebler, and honestly one or two little gags that would make me slightly giggle if they were a YouTube video, Gunn's reboot or remake or whatever the hell this thing is completely fails. It's not funny. It's stilted and poorly paced, with an abomination of a script that thinks it's funny and irreverent, when it really isn't anything more than a child behind a camera pointing and shooting at explosions and heads being blown up. It's gory, but never scary or interesting. It's violent without meaning or weight, and its soulless characters, void of any real emotion or story to tell, are simply cartoon characters on the screen as they hop from gunfight to gunfight. Don't get too attached, they told us. I absolutely won't. The Suicide Squad sits far down the list as absolutely one of the worst of the year, and down there with worst of them all. Dreadful film. Gunn, you had a shot to change the woeful attempt Ayer put out years ago, and you just joined him.
I think that's crazy, saying that this is a, like in just comparing it to the other movie. I don't understand how you could draw just on that alone. I don't understand how you don't think this is like a masterpiece, just purely based on that. My argument would be just look at the character work. Like, I'm not saying that it ever got to a point where I was like invested, and you know, but I think it does a darn sight better job. Because it's willing to kill off its characters, and I think that's really, really like a brazen thing. Sometimes it does it for laughs, which is, you know, I think can rub people the wrong way, and other times it does it for the feels. And I will say this: I've never liked Joel Kinnaman before this film. I've always found him flat. I've always found him just like he's just on the screen. I've never found him a presence. But in this, when he died, I was like, oh damn, I was just starting to like Joel Kinnaman. I would like to have seen him in the next one. Yeah. And so something's working. I think the pairing of the characters, and this is what James Gunn does really, really well. He not only does he come up with really good characters, he figures out how to pair them off remarkably well in different scenes so that they bounce off of one another. For that alone, that review is incorrect, sir, or madam, or however you classify yourself.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with you there, Sean, and I'm kind of shocked by that because I feel like he does a really good job for the amount of characters that are on screen. He does a really good job of making them all feel like less than one-dimensional, you know? And even if their motive is one-dimensional, like someone like Peacemaker, whose motive is kind of... is ridiculous, but that's what makes him such an interesting character. And you know, and I'm just that shocks me, because I think I would take any of these characters in this movie. I think they have way more depth than any of the characters from the first Suicide Squad movie. And it's ludicrous to me to say. I feel like you said about Joel Kinnaman there, Sean. It's interesting because I find him quite similar to Idris Elba in the sense that I think he's great. I just think that he's needed the right roles. I think he's got potential to be like a Clint Eastwood type. I think there's something about him. He's got very calm, cool demeanor. I've seen him in a couple of things now where I'm like, oh, you're great. You're just the thing that you're in is just not quite good enough for you, sort of thing. And I felt that way about Idris Elba in this. This to me was what I've been waiting for. And I'm going to say it, since The Wire, if I'm honest with you. If I'm really honest
with you. Wow, okay.
I think he's good in other stuff. I think he's good in other stuff. Don't get me, I think he's great. I just feel like he was really having fun with this. And
He's never had the role.
No, he's never had the role. He's got it. He's got it all. Do you know what I mean? He's got it all. He's a star. But he just has never had the role, really, I feel, in my personal opinion. That's really, and I feel like this is the closest we've come in a long time. I immediately can't think that they can bring Deadshot back, because Bloodsport is way more awesome. His powers are way more interesting. He can pull guns out of his thing. The fact he's got a xenomorph-esque mask.
The suit, how is amazing. Is that suit?
So good.
Just keeps on giving.
Fantastic name, Bloodsport, brilliant. Bloodsport. Named after, of course, the great 1988 classic starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. no, it's not really, but Man Can Dream. I just feel like it just blows my mind. Like the little characters, like Polka Dot Man, for example, or Ratcatcher, or these people in the movie, they don't need to have these moments that they have where, you know, you're seeing his mum constantly, or King Shark's kind of like with these other fishes and he's kind of sad because he's lonely, and you're getting all these little moments, and it's never like the... Okay, don't get me wrong, there is a scene where the characters do tell you about their characters, but
yes,
take that aside, you know, a lot of it is done through just their interactions with the other characters, or visuals, like, you know, him seeing his mum all the time, or like you said, Sean, great team ups. I just thought it was great. I think the he was saying about the pacing in the film, and I feel like it flew by. If I was to pick apart anything and say the pacing dropped, I feel like the second act kind of slow. It's kind of loses its way a little bit in the second act. But I feel like I think James Gunn is really good at openings and he's really good at ending movies. And I think he kind of struggles a little bit in the middle sometimes with a couple of his movies. And I feel like this was the same again. But like Guardians 2, if you like Sean says, look, first 10 minutes, if the first 10 minutes are great, and the finale of the movie are great, then I can forgive a little bit of a sag in the middle.
Yeah, it's something that I've really picked up on in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, where the whole kind of middle act of that film, none of the characters have anything to do but Peter Quill, so they're just kind of treading water. And it doesn't quite play the same way in this, but it's almost like there's a point where he can write really great characters and bounce them off each other, but exploring those characters deeper than the surface level, I think he tries to do that in a second act a lot, and I don't always think he explores it in the you get told it rather than it kind of being a bit more organic, but it never really grates, because he always manages to find, you know, like, I'm Mary Poppins, I may not be your daddy, you know, it's like, may not be your father, but I might be, you know, those he can find those moments, and I think give him another go at one of these, and I think he'll do it again.
I agree.
For me, so I don't know about you chaps, but as of time of recording, I've watched the film twice. You know, nearer I think just before, I guess, the third act, where the Jotunheim is collapsing and Peacemaker has Ratcatcher 2 in his sights.
Yeah.
And then it does the jump back 8 minutes prior.
Yeah.
Right. On both times, there were audible groans in the theater when it popped up with 8 minutes prior. Like, that, nobody liked that. Like when that was put into effect, nobody was happy. But I feel, like, personally, I feel as soon as you got over that initial groan of, like, oh, for fuck's sake, it was just starting to, like, do stuff. Like, the other team start doing stuff, like, and it builds up quite nicely to crescendo back at the point where it went back in time, if that makes sense.
It does. But
it was interesting that both this reviewer and in my cinema experiences, I've witnessed people be like, oh.
I think there's a reason for that, and I think it's because he's leaving you at a time where the tension and the action and the story is kind of peaking at this moment. And then to then cut away to a calmer period just before that happens, people are like, "Ah, I want to know what happens." But why I think it works is because it comes back around and you get to see it all again, and you get to see a great, like you said, crescendo where it all comes together. I think people should moan more at other movies when there's a fight scene and the two characters that you've been dying to see fight the whole movie are there, and they throw one punch, and then we cut away to the B plot that's happening, and then when we cut back, the fight's halfway over. Like, that annoys me way more. That annoys me way more. At least, like, he cut back and showed us the whole thing, you know. That happens way too often. It even happens in one of my favorite Marvel movies, which is Thor Ragnarok. I feel like it happens at a certain point when he's fighting Hela, kind of cuts away, and you're like, I kind of could have done with more of that, you know. But anyway, that movie's still great, but I still think it adds itself up, adds itself together. If that makes sense. All comes together. There we go. Adds itself together.
Okay, so the next review is going to be our critical review. It's a 1 out of 4 from Lillian Crawford. So, like with other critical reviews, I'm going to pause. There are multiple choreographs. you know the deal by now. One of the biggest problems with 2016's Suicide Squad was that you didn't care about any of the characters. In The Suicide Squad, there's a baffling dichotomy of villains who are entirely expendable and those who seem to be indestructible. Sylvester Stallone fills in for Vin Diesel in the group role as King Shark, who is shot, eaten alive, and crushed by several buildings while others explode in a splatter of guts at the slightest touch. Gunn seems to have recycled a lot of the gags from the Guardians films, with a few more F-bombs dropped in to reassure us that this is an adult movie.
I'm just going to jump in and say, like, yes, I do. I mean, the parallels between this and Guardians, you know, having the monosyllabic character, all of, you know, the kind of cocky wise mouth and all of that stuff. Yeah, it is present. You've got the, you know, Harley Quinn is Gamora vibes, you know. They are there. Like, there's no question about it. But I didn't care.
Yeah,
it didn't bother me.
I agree.
That's like complaining about why have, you know, a fucking a gunfight in a Western.
Yeah, no, I agree, Sean. I see it as you know, no one complains about the fact that in Reservoir Dogs we've got guys wearing black and white suits, black suits with a black tie, and they're talking about pop culture whilst doing horrible things, as they do in Pulp Fiction. You know, no one like goes, oh, you know, that's a problem with them. It's like, it's just that's his thing. You know, James Gunn's thing is getting us to care about a bunch of misfits and bringing some sort of humanity to it. I think he's really good at bringing humanity to really ridiculously obscure D-list creepy characters.
Fair. I'm not gonna lie, I thought that argument was gonna go more in the line of like the hero's journey and the fact that all stories are basically the same. And the fact that this is kind of what has been established as the team formula, where in every team you're gonna have the wisecracking guy, you're gonna have the guy that seems just buff and there to take the hits, and you're gonna have other characters that will fill the roles necessary in like a heist movie, action-esque film, which even though this is a superhero film and is branded as such, like it still takes cues from other genres, and thus there's no real difference between this and many others in the same vein.
Yeah, we didn't go that route, so.
And you didn't. I did. by saying that, I thought that that's what you would have said. Anyway, I shall continue.
You
need
to explain it. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, because you weren't gonna, so the audience gets to hear my lovely voice for a few more tones. Gunn does try to give his characters emotive, relatable backstories, but it always feels heavy-handed. We meet Idris Elba's Bloodsport in prison, where he's being told by his daughter what a bad father he's been. Daddy issues is a running theme. Newcomer, Danielle McQuire, became Ratcatcher 2 to follow her dead father's footsteps. It's no wonder their relationship was messed up. The camera pans to reveal he's Taika Waititi. Melquire gives the most compelling performance, although every time she shows human feeling, she's mocked by Bloodsport or Peacemaker as a millennial.
I feel like the first bit, when he said about the bit with Idris Elba and his daughter, for me, that mm-hmm. when that immediately started, I was like, oh, this is already better than 2016's Suicide Squad, because the way they deal with Deadshot and his daughter is way less nuanced than how it's done in this Suicide Squad, you know? I liked that they're just shouting at each other and screaming at each other. And yeah, it's just you're a bad dad, but it didn't feel like on the nose. It felt very natural to me. It felt like exactly what that person would say to him in that scenario. It didn't feel like we're trying to set up themes or anything. It just felt like these characters are having an emotional moment.
Yeah, I think that setup was so vastly superior to
100%.
What was the biggest issue with David Ayer's Suicide Squad, which is, you know, you never once believed that these characters were bad guys.
Yeah,
like, there was
yeah.
always that, you don't kill kids. You don't do, where's this one? It's just like, this weasel has killed 27 kids. Yeah. Did anybody check if he could swim? And then he drowns. And you're kind of like, that was horrible. Like, I didn't want him to drown. But you're like, he killed 27 kids. And then he's alive at the end. And you're like, I'm kind of glad he's alive. I hope he comes back. But he still killed 27 kids. It's like, it was just better thought out in terms of, you know, the classification of someone being a bad person doesn't mean that they're like morally absent. It just means they might have moral objections to certain things. Whereas I feel like David Ayer's script was way more focused on like that classic thing of you don't hurt women and you don't hurt children kind of vibes.
Which
is kind of like everybody who's got that, you know, I mean, don't hurt children, obviously, but you know, anybody worth their weight in salt can analyze this deeper than fucking Maud Flanders screaming, think of the children.
Or is it
Lovejoy's wife? I can't remember. Anyway, you know, that's how that film always kind of played to me. And then obviously, you know, Cara Delevingne doing her weird little dance.
Body undulations.
Yeah, that was something else. But with this, it was just like, even when it felt like it was not quite firing on all cylinders, it was fun. You know, people were expendable, and you know, the opening only proves that a lot can happen in this film. And I was surprised that, you know, a few things did happen the way that they happened. But ultimately, it's fun. It's fun, and it's fun because actually these characters have great rapport. Even if some of the emotional beats don't really work or seem heavy-handed because they're kind of told to you, it doesn't take away from the fact that all the stuff that gets you built around those scenes kind of really does work really, really well. And it's fun. That's my ultimate takeaway from it. It's really, really fun.
I agree. And I feel like I just don't understand how you can just at least had a blast of it. I feel like it doesn't take itself too seriously whilst also not dismissing the characters' feelings or moral issues. And I totally agree with you, Sean. I think that David Ayer's version really tried to be very like safe in that it was like, oh, we're gonna make sure you really like these characters because we've got to try to justify that they're a bunch of bad guys and we need them to kind of root for them. Whereas like this was like more like the 70s in the sense of like, you know, we don't give a shit if this guy's an arsehole. You're gonna follow him and you're gonna root for him. And I guess to an extent, even though I'm not the biggest fan of the movie, I guess Joker kind of showed people that that's possible again in this day and age. Well, particularly to DC and Warner Brothers. And I just really like that it didn't shy away from that, and they still were nasty pieces of work, but you kind of understood in their mind how they see the world and how they justify it in their head. Not that you agree with them, but you understand their moral code, and through that you like them because you kind of understand their weird way of viewing the world. And I think that's what makes this film stand out to me.
I think it's one of those that David Ayer was pushing for this is a cast of bad guys, quote unquote, but in reality we're showing them as like anti-heroes.
Yeah.
Like they're Robin Hood characters that will save you, but maybe steal your wallet. They won't kill you. They're not that bad. They're not going to do anything bad, but they will break a glass and steal a purse from a display. They'll do that because they're bad guys. Remember, they're bad guys, and that's what they do.
There's a really good the thing that I would always kind of draw comparison to show how this film, to how Gunn gets it right and how Ayer's version gets it so wrong, is the opening sequence where the rules of the device in their head and the fact that characters can be killed off at any point. In this opening, it's really fun and also a little bit like mean. And it's and it actually has a character purpose, like, you know, for, I can't remember the what's the woman that actually controls them and blows their heads up back at base? What's
Amanda Waller. Walker.
Amanda Waller, yeah, thank you. It sets something up for her later on, and actually it creates tension later on.
Yep.
But in Aya's version, you know, you get the character Slipknot, and it's like he just tries to run away and he's dead. And I remember watching it as just like, oh, so that's the end of that character then. Like, didn't get to do anything. And it just doesn't work because there's nothing built around it other than it's a plot device to explain, oh, here are some real stakes. Whereas James Gunn's like, I'm going to show you this opening character all the way through and he's going to be a total badass, and then he's just going to scream and try and run away. And it's like, there's consequence to it, but it's also like, that was really funny and I wasn't expecting that to go the way that went. And so immediately the film's kind of got some extra bullets in the chamber because you're like, okay, the world's been set up that anything can happen here. And I don't know if David Ayer thought he was doing that with Slipknot, but actually what he did was, oh, good. Some dumb shit's going to happen.
Yeah, 100%.
There is something to be said about the marketing and then the edit, which kind of fucks over David Ayer's version anyway. For example, the fact that all the other characters got these glorious, like almost playing card-esque stats, and these are all the things that they can do, and this is a memorable thing, a crime that they did. And then Slipknot gets nothing.
Yeah.
He's introduced as if he is part of the team. He will stay here.
And
he's
then
only in that one shot in the trailers, but he will definitely be here the entire time.
Yeah. I forgot fact that he doesn't get those stats. So bad.
It's so obvious that he will not be here very long.
Whilst
with this, they got rid of that. And even the poster and the opening title scroll gives all of those actors that were part of the opening sequence, it's still like, hey, they were worth their salt. They were here. Yeah. It's not our fault that they immediately died.
Definitely. You just set it up so much better, Sean. I couldn't agree with you anymore. And you made me realize then kind of why we root for those characters. Because even though they are nasty pieces of work, and we follow Michael Rooker's character, who is a nasty piece of work, you kind of feel sorry for him by the end of that scene. Because of the scenario, and that's the magic of it, and that's immediately you're in that spot of like, okay, yeah, they're bad people, but they're actually being treated like complete expendable characters, and through that you kind of feel sympathy for them. I just thought it was genius to just kill off all those characters and then just be like, nope, this is not the team, this is the team, and that everything about the opening was just leagues ahead.
Big up Jai Courtney for actually agreeing to do that stunt casting as well, because that was 100%. The thing that really sold that scene from him being in the previous film. Like, he gained nothing from that movie other than selling that gag, and I like you know, he's always been that kind of actor that's just always on the verge of breaking and never quite getting it right. And I'm not sure I want him to get it right still, but I at least respect him a lot. I still respect him a lot more for committing to that gag in the same way that Rooker did and Nathan Fillion did. Mm, and also, what's the guy from SNL called? Pete Davidson.
Yes.
Pete Davidson,
I agree.
I just wanted to highlight the thing you were just saying. Go for it. Jump. Do your point and then
I'll
do
mine. I was just going to say that I think I was a bit upset because I've actually, funny enough, thought Jai Courtney was the best thing in the other Suicide Squad movie. And I could have done with a few more characters turning on each other with, like, do you know, like, with power disparity. Like, I could have done with, like, Boomerang staying along a little bit, he keeps being mouthy, and then Peacemaker like shoots him and he's like, well, and everyone's like, well, what'd you do that for? And he's like, well, you know, he was ruining the peace of the team, you know, so he had to go. I could have done with more stuff, like, between the actual team and a bit more friction, but I feel like you could have done that a bit more with Captain Boomerang, but I still like that they just went, look, he's dead. this is a different movie to before. So, Luke, what was you saying?
Yeah, I was just going to say, so you know how the director's tip, save the cat?
Yeah.
It's like how you set up your hero. It's like you got to show them do something that is, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be like a big thing, but it's something for the audience to relate. I feel like this film has created the term kill the bird.
Yeah, yeah.
To set up your villains.
Save the cat, kill the bird.
That's really
kill
the true. Bird. I love that the bird was like eating him after. That was great. That's such a nice touch.
That was great. That was nice. That was nice touch. Yeah.
It was good. Right, continuing. Quinn, the squad's only other female member, is treated with similar disregard. Unlike Cathy Yan's multi-dimensional depiction of the character in Birds of Prey, here Robbie is reduced to the object of a prepubescent boy's masturbatory fantasies. She spends most of the film tied up and is hyper-feminized by Corto Matisse's dictator, Silvio Luna, in a red ball gown which becomes increasingly eroticized as it's torn apart.
I mean, yes, okay, you could look at it and go, all right, it's a bit tired that the female character is the one that has to have sex to survive in some ways, but she has sex because she wants to.
Yes.
And you could argue, well, why would you write it that way or whatever? Margot Robbie's too big a powerful, like, actress, and I think she's an exec producer as well, and is in full control of that character. I think she has the agency to decide whether that's a good plot point or not. I thought it was really funny. I think it when she shoots him, it offers that kind of wonderful relief of tension to be like, oh, another bad guy. And then she talks about it, and I think it was really fun to see her beat the fuck out of those guys in that hallway sequence. I'm not sure what I never really understood the flowers. Like, I never, like, even now, having seen it, I'm like, it's just an aesthetic choice, but, and I'm still not sure what it is or what the decision maker behind that was. Yeah, but
I can only assume it's some sort of, this is what it's like inside Harley's brain.
Yeah, maybe. It never bugged me. I thought it was really fun, and it gave her agency, the fact that she got out all by herself.
Because
if that was James Bond, everybody would have been like, of course he got out by himself, and my man got laid. It's the same fucking argument. You know, as I've talked it through and come to that conclusion, fuck you, reviewer.
I just feel like as well, like, I kind of felt like the point of the movie was that it was saying, no, this is not what you're getting. You're not going to get the sexualized Harley Quinn that you got maybe in the kind of last one, in the last Suicide Squad, where she's kind of so, you know, in awe of the Joker does whatever he says, or is still hooked up on the pain that she got from that experience of being with the Joker. Instead of this one, it's like, yeah, we're gonna have this little moment, and I liked it for like a moment of tension, because I was like, this is not what's gonna be happening, right? And the whole time you're like, what's gonna happen? And then for her to just turn around and shoot him, I thought that was great. It was like, this is not the movie you're gonna get. And yeah, we kind of dealt with those themes a little bit in Birds of Prey, but I don't know. I just thought it was a really nice moment. I thought it was really done really well, and I mean, it's easy for me to say, but I never felt that she was particularly degraded to something than a sexual object. I felt like she was a really strong character in herself, and like Sean said, she escaped before they could even a bunch of men can come and save her, which was a great scene, and I thought that was hilarious.
I think it's one of those that it can be read that way if you're going in with that sort of mindset. As three guys, of course, we're not going to approach medium unless it's glaringly obvious. And so for me, it was that it set her up as damsel in distress. The boys need to go save her. And she don't need saving. She's Harley motherfucking Quinn.
Yeah, exactly.
She can save herself.
Yeah.
I think it's the and best does. Version of the character. I think it's the best she's been in any of the movies, including her solo movie.
Yeah.
Which wasn't even a solo movie. That's how good she was, but then she stole that entire film. Right. We're supposed to buy that Quinn could suddenly be convinced to settle down and live like a princess to accommodate the film's totally unnecessary sex scene. Suddenly she's kicking colonial butt, squeezing men's heads between her thighs, before being reduced to being the second stupidest character next to the shark guy. Such erratic characterization is exhausting and symptomatic of the Suicide Squad's insistence on being a mind-numbing sensory assault.
I think a sensory assault is actually kind of maybe what it was going for, and I think James Gunn would take that as a positive review as opposed to a negative one. Like, it is a full-on assault of the senses. For me, my senses had a lot of fun with it.
Yep. I think the only thing that you should be offended by when she strangles dudes with her legs is that she didn't have the arm in, because that's not a legitimate choke. It wouldn't be the reverse triangle wouldn't work without the arm in, and she didn't have the arm in. So, and he also couldn't snap a neck for her. But that's the only thing you should be offended by. Other than that, you know, it's a legitimate move. I don't know. You know. That's all I'm saying.
Well, she jumped in the vat. She got some super strength up in there. She's fine.
Yeah, you could argue it would be nice to see a man kill another man like that. Like you don't see it. There is that divide there. But I don't think it detracts away from her strength in this movie.
Definitely. John Wick kills people with his legs.
You know, but you know what I mean? Like, actually, yeah, wraps his neck. Like,
it's from the top position, isn't it? That seems to do it a lot, where it's like, it doesn't.
Yeah. You could argue Tom Cruise does it in the escape scene in when he's being tortured at, is that Rogue Nation, the beginning of Rogue Nation? When he like climbs up the pole.
He does also choke himself in Oblivion with his legs.
I was like, what do you
he
mean?
Chokes and then I remembered himself what happened with his legs.
Yeah, have you seen Oblivion?
I've not.
You should. It's actually, do you know what? The first hour of that movie is fucking great. The last hour, you can hear the studio making phone calls being like, we need it to go a certain way, which is where Charlie's referring to. But I think that's an underrated Tom Cruiser.
Fair enough. Okay, last paragraph. Stylistically, The Suicide Squad looks nothing like its predecessor. The first half is shot like a 2000s sitcom, replete with Peter Capaldi reviving his Malcolm Tucker glare as the thinker. The second goes full-blown kaiju. We know this because someone says it. With a monster villain described at the start as being like a butthole. Even though, in actuality, it resembles a collection of vulvas. The Suicide Squad is crass, noisy, and brash. A disturbing glimpse inside the mind of James Gunn.
Again, I think he'd take those statements at the end as positive reviews. That's what he's going for.
That's true.
Do you know what? Like, my problem with a lot of big blockbuster movies is that we always need to save the world at the end. The world's going to be destroyed. I think the very inclusion of that line, we've got a fucking kaiju on our hands, or whoever says it, whatever the exact line is, actually broke the tension of that for me. And I was like, oh, that's funny. Like that's a good that's a fun way to do this. And it doesn't ever really play that out. Like, I love the fact that the starfish gets that line at the end. It was like, I was very happy just staring at the stars. It was just like, I thought there was something in there that I was like, that's a great character moment that, you know, it didn't need.
That's what James Gunn does. Ultimately what's so good about James Gunn is that he gives you moments like that. He doesn't need to give you it. That scene was great. It ended, but no, we're going to give that character, that alien that is so far removed from us and what we are, and give it just a tiny little human moment that we can all relate to. And just to give that character just a little bit more to chew on. And I thought that was fantastic. I personally loved the, I love the fact that they're kind of like goofy looking, the starfish, but also horrifyingly, terrifyingly bloody like face huggers from like alien or something, and the fact that they could talk and they sounded like their actual voices and that they were being tortured on. I just loved the way it fit the tone for me of like, this is this wacky design with this horrid underlining thing happening, which is kind of the Suicide Squad as a whole. It's done for laughs, but really it's kind of fucked up what's happening. And I loved that. And the whole time I kept thinking, oh, okay, so we haven't met the antagonist yet. It's going to be Capaldi's the Thinker. He's going to control them. And then when he gets himself just like ripped apart and he's like, I can change. That was brilliant. And the fact, I actually liked that it was this big starfish character that when I saw in the trailer, I was kind of like, oh, really? Like another big threat thing. But in the end, it actually was great and totally new and fresh and fun. And I don't know, I actually had a blast of it. I thought it was great. I thought it was absolutely great.
And I liked
It's just come to me that that final line kind of recontextualizes Starro in a almost the first Blade Runner, the whole like tears in the rain sort of thing, where it's like where you kind of hear that and then you realize that those the symbiotic people aren't actually the bad guys of their story. They were just put in a bad situation, which is very much like Starro, who was chilling out, minding his own business, when the Americans were like, hey, you're coming with us now, and then tortured him for like 30 years.
Yeah.
So I'd probably come out a bit pissed.
It gives a real humanity to that character at a point at which it didn't necessarily need it. But as Charlie says, that's what Gunn does really, really well. I also really like the fact that there was a consequence to, like, if one of those things went on your face, you were dead.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
as soon as... And I was just like, that again, reaffirms that kind of Suicide Squad thing where it's like, all right, there's going to be collateral damage that we're going to have to expect here. And it's like, that makes you a bad person. Do you know what I mean? Like, knowing that. And I think the fact that there's fallout from that, large-scale fallout, is really good. You know, it's done in comedy effect when they go to rescue Joel Kinnaman's character. And that's so darkly funny that it's such a great sequence. I think it might be the best sequence in the film.
Oh, definitely.
I like the fact that there's consequence. I like the fact that he used some cool animatronics to show how they were tortured and stuff. And yeah, I actually think for once the big giant monster at the end really delivered. It was like
I agree.
It was like RoboCop meets Captain Planet somehow. It was wonderful.
It's true. It was. I also like little moments like, you know, when the kind of cute looking fish that King Shark was looking at.
Yeah.
And they kind of they do the same size as him. And then, you know, they end up being these evil, like blood sucking little fishes, which I think, is so James Gunn. I just loved it because then you're like, oh, they wasn't being friendly to King Shark. They were actually sizing him up to see if they could all eat him.
Yeah.
I was just like, that was great.
They were getting a direct line on who was getting which bit.
Yes,
which
exactly.
Which is what he was doing to his team. So it's like, it's come full circle.
Yeah, literally. brilliant.
Good times. Okay. Defense rest. The case is out for the jury. Nope. We're now the jury. Is the film awful?
No. The Suicide Squad is awesome.
It's awesome, yeah.
It is awesome.
Had a great time. Awesome.
I agree with this. I agree. It doesn't sit at like peak awesomeness. I feel like there's little bits here and there that could have been better or improved, but it kind of fits the genre and the way it's played out. It's great. It's a fun time, and I don't understand how I found so many reviews that were like, the first one was better. You're crazy. The first nonsense. One wasn't even a good film. It's never insane. Mind a good Suicide Squad
absolutely
film.
Nonsense. I think that was Will Smith's family. All the reviews were by Will Smith's family.
Nice.
Shout out, Jaden. Okay.
Double bill. What are we double billing this with, guys? Who's going first? Oh, you've got your thinking faces on.
Forgot about this question. I totally forgot about this question, man.
Crap.
Oh.
Have you got one, Luke?
And I won't even
go.
I have a couple. Well, I have two. Depending on whether or not we're playing with like you can't have James Gunn films, or you can have James Gunn films. Because if you can, obviously a Guardians of the Galaxy yeah. would be a good double bill, because it's the same sort of themes executed differently to different effects.
Yep.
Alternatively, if I'm not allowed a James Gunn film, I will have another Suicide Squad film, but not David Ayer's Suicide Squad film. I will have Batman Assault on Arkham, animated feature film, which features the Suicide Squad assaulting Arkham Asylum, and it is great. It was the film I thought David Ayer's film was gonna be before we all watched David Ayer's Suicide Squad. And that's my answer.
Cool. I've got two, I think.
Yeah, okay.
For the kind of like balls to the wall, like director just making it as they see fit, RoboCop.
Okay, like, yeah, I think
RoboCop was probably a big influence on this movie. And just for the dark, this is going to go real dark, not sure where the characters are going, kind of comedy. A 1990, I want to say, 8 movie directed by Pete Berg called Very Bad Things. It's Christian Slater, Jon Favreau, Cameron Diaz, and Leyland Orser. It's a really good underseen film, and it's dark and violent.
Oh.
And it's and it's funny as hell. If you haven't seen it, absolutely go watch it. I think that would be an interesting double bill with this.
Okay. And Charlie.
I'm kind of cheat with this, and I think the perfect movie to watch this next to is Super by James Gunn. For me, it has
the exact same tone
to it. You get your superheroes, your fucked up superheroes, you get your violence, you get some kind of weird other stuff that I don't want to say because I don't want to ruin it, that kind of fits the third act possibly of this movie. And then I guess if you wanted me to pick something different, I know this isn't tonally necessarily the right thing, but something like The Dirty Dozen, where it's kind of like a group of criminal soldiers going into the war, getting picked off. That's kind of Marvel. But yeah, I think Super tonally fits it perfectly.
Yes. And of course, the other one, the unspoken one, realistically, you probably shouldn't, but you could double bill it, is to double bill it with David Ayer's Suicide Squad and have that first, endure that, and then get the remake, sequel thing. In my head, do you remember Hulk and then The Hulk film? Incredible Hulk?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, is it the same thing where it's like, hey, it's not a sequel, but it is a sequel, but it's a remake, but it's a reboot? You know?
Yeah.
So it kind of just
ticks all the boxes.
I've just thought of another film that I'd completely forgotten about until you said Super. It's a 2006 movie starring Michael Rapaport called Special. I know of this. A lonely comic book fan, Les Franken, has a reaction to medication and becomes convinced he's a superhero. It's very much like Super. It came out about 3 years before.
Yeah.
I would love to watch it again because I think very much like Super and like this. I think it's incredibly violent as well, and actually quite dark and quite funny. So yeah, Special. I'm going to throw that in there. Readers, maybe you are reading this. Do we get Braille translations as well? I don't know. How able are we? That's worth checking out as well. So that's what we got.
And the last thing I'm going to say is,
go on, then.
If they do a sequel, I think different director, and he kills 100%. Off the characters from the last one at the start again,
great.
And we have a new list of characters. That's what I'm thinking. And we should just keep doing it.
And from like a publisher way of just don't have Harley Quinn in it, and then you don't have to worry, because of course she's still making money. So kill her.
Yeah.
Also, do you know what would be great? Executive decision, because that Steven Seagal like got top billing in that movie, and they kill him off in the first 20 minutes. And it's just, I remember seeing that as a kid and being like, whoa, what? I'm spending the whole movie going like, is he coming back?
No. Which reminds me, Steven Seagal needs to be in one of these movies.
do you know what? That would be amazing. That would be so good.
So good.
He would have been great doing that Michael Rooker part at the beginning.
Definitely.
Sean. Give the people your contact details.
Sean Grimsey Films com if you need. Do you know what? I'm actually booked up for ages now. I'm so tired. I've got too much work on.
Too much work.
So don't call me.
All the shout outs were just too effective.
Yeah, unless it's Warner Brothers.
Unless it, yeah. Listen, I've got an idea for a Suicide Squad movie with Steven Seagal that you guys are ready to
hit us up. Hit us up.
Cut the check.
Cut the check.
And Charles.
They can find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Your Favorite Film Is Awful. And they can find us on Twitter at FabFilmIsAwful. And on Patreon, Your Favorite Film Is Awful.
Beautiful. Wonderful. Tell us if you enjoyed the film. I don't think I've ever asked you, guy. You listener. Listener, tell us if you thought the film was good.
Leave it in the comments below.
Ultimately, yeah. Or just message us on one of the many socials Charlie just reeled off.
So do that.
But not me, because I'm too busy.
Yeah, but not Sean. Don't tell Sean. Sean cares, but we can tell him for you.
I love you.
Listener, I am hoping that you're having a lovely day and a lovely week. And ultimately, bye-bye. We're done. Well, bye-bye. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Bye.